Welcome to Synthaholics. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me is the suffering
Aaron O'Brien.
How many times have you seen yourself die today?
Ooh, you know what? I die a little bit every day, so.
Just die a little bit inside?
Yeah, a little bit inside every day.
That happens mostly when I'm at work.
Yeah, it's pretty much every day for me. But hey, we're going to go back in time again. We're going Deep Space Nine, the episode Visionary.
Oh, well, we do have a little bit of news today. I don't know if you saw, and we definitely didn't talk about it before the show. Because we talked about a lot of other things before the show today.
We had diarrhea of the mouth before the show.
We hadn't seen each other in so long. But David Ogden Stiers, who played Dr. Timokin in Star Trek The Next Generation's fourth season episode, Half a Life, in 1991, he passed away, I guess, today or the other day, at the age of 75. Today, as of the recording. He also played the Major Charles Emerson Winchester the third on MASH.
From MASH. Yeah, MASH. Yeah, he was a big part of MASH. Yeah, his MASH part was pretty amazing. His role in MASH was, I mean, he's a notable character, and he's a really fine actor.
Well, I mean, if he's got that really long name, he better have been a big character on MASH. I never watched MASH, but...
You haven't? Oh, it's worth watching.
I think my parents watched it when I was a kid, but I just tuned out, or I just, when they were watching, I just leave the room because I didn't get it. To play that, the part of Timokin, that was such a good role. It was so heartbreaking. That whole thing with him and Loxana Troy, that was such a good episode. Mm-hmm. And, it's sad that he's passed away, 75. I mean, that's a decent life. That's a pretty good life.
It's a good life. A lot of people are living longer these days, but who knows? Maybe it could have been other health complications. But yeah, on regular cable TV, they replay MASH pretty regularly.
I haven't had cable in years. Ever since the Great Purge, you and I are from.
Yeah, you just got rid of it, huh?
Yeah.
The Purge, when we had to kill everybody.
Well, when they were trying to kill us, but you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We weren't trying to kill anybody.
We were the ones getting killed.
No!
From like, what, 2 years ago? During that Purge, I was also purging things I didn't need to pay for, and cable was one of them, so... Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just sad to see him go. I mean, he was such a he's an amazing actor. I mean, just from that one episode of TNG, like it he sold it, and he was so good.
Yeah, well, in MASH, you definitely get. I mean, he plays in MASH. He kind of plays like a stick in a mud kind of character, very intelligent but not fun loving. And the other guys are like goofy, but his role is deeper than just a stick in the mud. You know, he has like, there's some really powerful parts that he, you know, different episodes that you experience. So yeah, great actor. It's just too bad we lost him.
Yeah, definitely sad to see him go. I just wanted to mention that because, you know, again, he was a Star Trek actor, and you know, he's only one episode, but I mean, sometimes these guys in these one episodes make such an impact, and that's just, I mean, like, you know, Loxana episodes are always awesome, and then he was part of that part that made that one episode amazing.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. Yeah, I agree.
But man, off the sad news, we're like you said, we were talking Deep Space Nine, and as I alluded to with our intro, Suffering of O'Brien, we're talking Deep Space Nine, the Visionary.
Yes, back to Visionary again, and... Deep Space Nine. Who'd have thought we'd have gone back in time again? But here we are. So Deep Space Nine. This is season 3, episode 17, and first aired on February 27th, 1995. So
this episode was so great, and it introduces the beginning of one of my favorite things between Bashir and O'Brien, the dartboard. makes its first appearance being played in this episode. I think it appeared in a previous episode, but this is the first time it was actually played.
I enjoyed this episode. You know, what's funny is when you brought this episode up, I kind of forgot about it. And then I rewatched it and I was like, I remember how much I like this episode because it's so, you know, O'Brien saying I hate temporal mechanics and stuff like
that.
Yeah, it's really interesting. So it's got that typical weird time dilation, weird stuff going on. So good stuff.
But in a fun way that makes poor O'Brien suffer.
Well, we get the suffering right off the bat because the show opens with O'Brien laying on the floor. Apparently, one of the plasma conduits blew while he was attempting to reroute them. And he has Bashir's there tending to him. He says he's a mild case of radiation poisoning. And he injects him with some medicine and says, you know, just take it easy. Light duty for the next couple of days. And Sisko's like, that's right. Light duty. That means don't do anything real strenuous. And
don't be crawling around the Jeffries tubes. And the funny thing is they're in ops right now. Like there's a major power junction apparently that just blows up in ops. I mean, did they booby trap their own bridge, the Cardassians?
That goes your old theory. Why do they have all that power routing through all those
controls
on the bridges? Yeah. But apparently
they only need to be dummy terminals. If you've got this giant computer core in the middle of your ship, you don't need...
I don't get it, but yeah, O'Brien says, you won't get any arguments out of me. I'm going to just take it easy. Next, we get there. Kira and Sisko are going to meet this Romulan delegation that are coming to meet and conference with them about the Dominion. At this point, though, while they're going down to the promenade to meet the Romulan delegation, apparently there's drunken Klingons walking around and they outside of Quark's, and they have the security guards are taking them into custody. And Odo explains that the Klingon had a freighter that had some issues and needs some repairs. It's going to take 2 days. And Sisko takes Odo aside and goes, look, the Klingons are going to be here for 2 days and the Romulans are going to be here 2 days. Let's hope that these two don't meet.
I hope they don't mix.
Yeah, let's not.
They're mix. Not the House of Duras, right? Because the Duras seem to like the...
the Romulans. They like the Romulans. But so... Odo's like, okay, yeah, sure.
It was just so refreshing to see a regular Klingon.
Yeah, you were like, yeah.
Yes. I don't know. It's just I miss the classic Klingon look. I mean, the look in Discovery definitely started to grow on me, but
it is kind of nice to see it, but I feel two ways. I feel nostalgic about the old Klingons, but also now that I look at them, they're a little silly. Not terribly silly, but just a little silly. Well, because they don't look alien enough. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but you know, that's the thing. Like, you know, what Samuel said on our round table, like that there's three different classes of Klingon. Then it's the same thing I've said before too, where you've got the smooth head from the augment virus, you've got the regular you've seen, and then you've got the hyper Klingons who tried to do genetic engineering by rolling back the Klingon on the evolutionary dial.
Right.
To make them like a hyper alien, a hyper Klingon. So that's my mind as how the Klingons look in Discovery. But yeah, it was just nice to see it. But all the, I don't know, the Klingon words didn't sound right.
From what we've been told too, I mean, when we've talked about people speaking Klingons, that a lot of times when we hear the Klingon language, sometimes it's just made up.
Yeah, when we had Jen, the Klingon pop warrior on, she said a lot of times in Deep Space Nine, the Klingon was very Paramount Hole and not Klingon Hole.
Yeah, right, exactly. So, interesting. So, the next part of the scene, we have Kira and Sisko. They go down to the docking port, and there's two security guards waiting, and they open the door, and the Romulans walk in.
How many couches died for those those Romulans out there?
Many couches died to bring you this information.
It's like the Bothans. I would love to talk to one of those actors that wore Romulan outfits. Like, maybe if we ever run into Marina Sirtis at a con, I just what was that made of, and how hard was it to move wearing a couch? Because it looks like the most uncomfortable couch material ever.
You don't know that. It could be the coziest clothes that you ever wore.
It's
walking around just perpetually in luxury.
Looks say different. They look so stiff. And
they do look stiff.
And the thing is, you know, back in the day, these are a 3-4 ratio. Like, you can't even, they can't even fit the entire, uniform on the screen. They got to cut off part of the arms because when they get close-ups on him.
It's funny that you're talking about size, too, because this scene is exactly when the Romulans are coming through the docking port, and they're, like, bending down through that tube. And I'm like, why wouldn't they just make that tube just, like a half a meter taller? Just because, I mean, like, not everyone is short. Like, what if Saru walked through there? You know, he'd literally would be, like, on his hands and knees walking through, like, hey. You know?
He'd have to, like, crouch and, like, a tippy toe on his hooves. Yeah, it's crazy. And the thing is, Cardassians aren't short. It's not like they're jaw.
They're kind of taller. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Cardassians are, like, they're not Jawas. They're tall. They're pretty big. I mean, I'm sure some Cardassians are short, but I want to say most of the actors who play Cardassians are tall.
You just put in my head a Jawa space station.
It's like a giant sound crawler.
I'm kind of liking this idea. Well, so we get the Romulan name Ruan, and stuff. And he's like reoccurring character in Deep Space Nine. And the actor plays like a bunch of admirals and stuff like that throughout all
Star Trek.
Star Trek, right?
He definitely looks familiar.
Oh yeah, yeah. So he even played a Bolian, tell you the truth.
Oh yeah, the Bolian probably cut Picard's hair.
Not the one that cut Picard's hair. So the actor's name Jack Shearer, and he played Bolian in the Deep Space Nine episode Forsaken. Vadios or
but his name is Shearer. He should have been Mott.
And he's also in the Voyager episode Non Sequitur,
yeah.
And he's also in Star Trek First Contact as Admiral Hayes. So Jack Shearer.
Good for him. Yeah, getting into movies. Yeah. That's awesome.
He's in a ton of shit. Well, so Ruan steps out and has got his aides. And they're basically saying, hey, Cisco's like, we have accommodations. We know you took a long trip. And then the Romulan's like, nope, we are not interested in that. We just want your intelligence reports in the Dominion.
And we don't want to sleep on a hard Cardassian bed. That's the thing is, like, it's crazy. They're like, oh, everyone's complaining about the Cardassian beds. You've got replicators. You've got transporters. Why don't you just replicate, like, a regular bed?
It's not important, Dave. Just sleep on it. Sleep on those flea-bitten mattresses.
Those concrete slabs.
I know, right? So they head over to their briefing room with the Romulans to do that. At next scene we have Quark hanging the dartboard for Miles O'Brien. And Quark is skeptical about what this is going to do for his profits.
They go together with bars like eggs and bacon.
And Quark's like, what the hell is eggs and bacon?
It's like root beer, but better.
Root beer and ice cream making a float. He's like, what are you talking about?
No, it's kind of lasers. And then he throws a fistful of darts and they all hit the Morn.
Yeah, it was a great scene. Morn got like, what the hell?
What if I hit his eye? Eyes are extremely expensive. I love how like how they mentioned that replacing organs is so expensive. That's pretty nice.
Yeah, it's interesting too, especially since it seems medical care is free. But
well, at least on Deep Space Nine, since it's Federation run.
Right, right.
Unless there's another doctor on Deep Space Nine that doesn't, it's not free.
He's the quack.
Like a Ferengi doctor, he charges like an arm and a leg.
Yes, right. So after this little kerfuffle with Morn, all of a sudden Brian's
trying to show him how to throw the dart correctly, and as he starts to throw it,
yes, he is catapulted into the future where he sees himself from across the promenade talking to Quark about Klingons who destroyed two of his holo suites and he needs repairs. And O'Brien's like, you know, this happens all the time. You know, you shouldn't let these Klingons in your holo suites. And then he turns around and the two O'Briens see each other and then he disappears.
Well, how are they destroying the holo suites? Isn't it force fields? Like, how are they breaking through the force fields and destroying the holo suites?
Apparently, they're not that powerful of force fields.
I guess, but at the same time, Quark says they're paying him double. But like, it seems to me like repairing an entire like whatever would be more expensive than, you know, just getting double paid for using it. You know what I mean? Like, when you use a, like a virtual reality device, like in a mall or something, you pay like $5 or $10 or go to a cyber cafe, you pay, like, you know, $10, $15, $20.
Right.
It's not much because the device itself is usually a couple hundred dollars. You know what I mean? But fixing the couple hundred dollar device, even if you're getting paid double, is not, it doesn't seem
right.
The math doesn't work out there from what I can tell.
Right. Exactly. But still, nonetheless, so O'Brien sees himself and then he disappears and then he passes out on Quark's floor while trying to throw a dart. And Quark's like, that's how you play darts? Next we get in the infirmary, Bashir's basically saying, yeah, it's just the side effect of radiation poisoning.
I'll and fix gives, you right up.
And he gives him a couple shots and then he says, O'Brien says, I had a vision or some kind of hallucination of myself talking to Quark about the Klingons destroying the, you know, this holosuite. And he's like, well, that's just a mild hallucination. It could be, you know, part of radiation poisoning.
And you have a severely deficient fantasy life. Here, let's go to the Alamo. Then you can have something really to fantasize about.
Ooh, the Alamo. So next we get in the conference room. We have the Romulans and Sisko all and Kira talking about the Dominion. And basically, the Romulans like, this is the greatest threat to the Alpha Quadrant. Basically, they're giving the information that we gave the Defiant a cloaking device so you could infiltrate them and find out more information. And you're going to give us all the information, but you haven't given us much of anything. And we want to know, and they're asking more about Odo as being a changeling, as he's one of the founders. And they're like, well, Odo is not really one of the founders. He's a changeling, but that's about it. Like,
biologically, he's the same race as the founders, but he doesn't know anything. He was, you know, shot out from them hundreds of years ago. He was a science experiment to a Bajoran, and then now he's a security officer. He doesn't know shit.
Right, and of course the Romulans always being under suspicious about everything. They basically say, we don't believe you, and they're like, well, whatever you believe, it doesn't matter. And next, the Romulans demand that they get all classified reports, every little piece of information on the Dominion, no matter how small it might be. And Sisko says, well, I'll clear it with Starfleet and see if we can get all that to you.
Then clear it then.
Yes.
Next It'd be thing, funny if you just ripped off his wig. I am Starfleet.
That would be hilarious.
I'm Admiral Hayes.
Oh. That would be funny. I thought you meant Sisko ripping off his hair and it was a wig because he's bald later on.
Scooby-Doo thing.
Yeah. You can't just give out information. You're fired, Sisko. Damn it. Next, we get on the promenade. Quark is complaining to O'Brien about his damaged holosuites by the Klingons. And in mid-sentence, O'Brien stops and remembers, like, ooh, deja vu. And then there he is. He's looking at another O'Brien across the way. And
I love how Quark looks at him, and then Quark's like, I think you've got worse issues to worry about. I'll wait for later.
That was funny how Quark just answered. And, like, his nonchalance, like, there's another Chief O'Brien.
I think you've got bigger issues here. I'll talk to you later.
that's when you know you're in good sci-fi, when the characters around you don't really react at freak out. They're just like, okay.
That's weird, but you definitely got issues. It's just so nice to have Armin Shimmerman back and watching Deep Space Nine again, because I honestly haven't seen Deep Space Nine in ages, I feel like.
And it's been a while, for sure.
And that's the thing. It's like he's like a minor character, but he's obviously like one of my favorite characters on Deep Space Nine. And so far, none of the minor characters have really done that for me in Discovery. I can't wait. I really hope we get, like, you know, with, you know, more with Demure, more with the, you know, the artificial person or the augmented person.
Maybe Tilly. You could say Tilly.
Yeah, Tilly. Yeah. I like Tilly.
I don't know if she was originally meant to be as big as she was, but, you know, like a big as a role. Maybe she was. I'm not sure. But I don't know. Quark is – he's a pretty established character in Deep Space Nine.
Yeah. One of my faves.
Oh, yeah. He's just the acting is amazing. So especially under all that makeup.
Well, I feel like there's two, like, you know, like Discovery says, oh, we've got the first gay couple. But I'm pretty sure there's two gay couples on Deep Space Nine.
Oh, really?
We haven't gotten to this part yet. But, you know, we definitely got Bashir and O'Brien. And then we've got Odo and Quark, because later on in the episode, we haven't gotten to it yet. But Sisko talks to Odo about, you know, investigating the Klingons, and he's like, well, I'm going to investigate this person, this person, this person, and Quark.
Yeah, and Quark.
and Sisko's like, you don't really think Quark has anything. He's like, I always investigate Quark. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
They're in love.
Just this cyclical thing with those two always going back and forth.
It's just funny. So I'm like, I'm pretty sure DS9 had two down low gay characters, you know, two gay couples.
Well, you know, definitely hinted at for sure. So our next scene we have in Sisko's ready room office, we have Dax, and she says that she did detect a minor temporal disturbance in Quark's and on the promenade around the same time that O'Brien had this, future vision. So it becomes apparent that O'Brien did go into the future, and they have to figure out why this is happening. And they have this idea that the ionized radiation that he was exposed to earlier might have done something that is pushing him forward into the future. And that's why he could that's why this happened. While they're talking about this, O'Brien flashes forward again. And now he's in Quark, and he's in the middle of a bar fight with a bunch of Klingons. And after... Right, and of course, Miles jumps right into the fight, even though there's another O'Brien fighting.
He's got to save himself from getting hit with a knife.
And just at the last minute, he's like, look out, and a chair comes crashing across the over his head, so he ducks just in time. And then he comes back into his regular time back in Sisko's office, and he passes out on the floor. So, again, O'Brien's back into the infirmary, and Bashir's scanning him and checking out what's going on. And basically, he's trying to figure out why he's doing this time shift. So they're basically, they have to do some medical work on O'Brien so he doesn't die from doing this time shifting. But Sisko basically says that Dax is going to figure this out. So don't worry. Dax will get this all figured out pretty soon. And
you know, you want to rely on Dax, but Dax, as much as she is the science officer, she never really succeeds at doing anything very good science-y.
I was going to say, like, somebody says, like, if anybody's going to figure out Dax well, I'm like, does Dax really figure anything out?
I don't think she ever has.
I'm not saying Dax is completely incompetent, but Dax never made me go, like, wow, what a great science officer. Was never, like, a Spock, Data.
She was just hot.
Yeah, even... Yeah. I mean, yeah, for sure. But even like Ensign Kim was a bit of a better science officer than Dax.
Oh, ow. That's a low blow. Ow.
Well, yeah. I know, but
you gotta get the aloe vera out.
Yeah, but Kim at least was like, seemed like he was interested in the science. Dax is sort of like a passing, like, I guess this is what I'll do for now.
I get, you know, as much as I love Dax, it's mostly because it's Terry Farrell. And again, she's hot, but, she wasn't really greatly written for, especially for this character that had all this like wisdom and, you know, all these past lives to draw from. She made some really dumb decisions and didn't seem like great at science.
Yeah. I mean, obviously she has some science background, just wasn't like I wasn't astounded by her science knowledge, but
I feel like they just didn't know how to write her.
Yeah.
It's like this great concept for a character, and then it's like, crap. How do we write this character?
You know what it is for me is like even like this episode I think is perfect. Like she sets up the science parameters of why something's happening, but then the rest of everyone has to figure out how to get around it.
Yeah, like she's telling what's happening, but she doesn't figure out how to fix it.
Like with Kirk and Spock, Spock will tell you why it's happening, and then figure out a way how to fix it, and then Kirk will go do it. You know. Same thing with Data.
Or McCoy could do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, same with Data and the rest of the, Enterprise D. But this is like, you know, she's like, oh, this is the reason why it's happening. And O'Brien and Bashir, you figure it out.
Have fun. See you guys. I'm done.
Yeah, yeah.
Let me know how that turns out.
Let me know how that turns out. Yeah. Especially for this temporal mechanics thing, you think Dax would be, this would be a heavy Dax episode, but not really.
Like she's really sparsely. I feel like she's pretty sparse for being one of the main characters in DS9.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I don't know. She's interesting. I mean, for sure. I mean, you want to see more of her, but they just never wrote her in too much.
Yeah.
Not as much as she should have been.
Well, but then again, she's also not as little as Tasha. She's like this weird in-between.
Yeah, right, for sure.
She's definitely got more to do than Tasha, but she doesn't have as much to do as like the other characters.
Yeah.
It's really weird. But then again, Deep Space Nine has also like the largest main cast.
Yeah, it's a big cast, for sure. And everyone has like almost equal roles. I mean, even Sisko, who you'd think would be the lead role, you know, he does have his fair share of screen time, but not as much as you Dax, would think.
Or as much as Odo or Quark sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Or even O'Brien. Brian, this is a heavy O'Brien episode, so.
Well, O'Brien gets like at least like one episode a season, pretty much, for his suffering episodes.
Right, exactly. And so we're back into the meeting with the Romulans. The Romulans want access to all of the Defiance logs and the ship, see everything on the ship, and they want all personal logs. And Sisko's like, what, personal logs?
Personal logs is out of the question, but we'll set up we'll let them debrief us. And he's like, Kira, just be diplomatic. And then it cuts to her screaming at them.
Right, yeah, just screaming like, how dare you give me, you know, want to go and she was asking, they were asking if Odo and her have like some kind of relationship.
And like, why she prematurely abandoned the Defiant. It's all this stuff is great. And you know, as much as I've ragged on Kira in the past, like her personality made that cut just perfect. Where it's like, oh, just be diplomatic. She's like, I'm always diplomatic. And she's like, then it cuts to her just screaming. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah. She's pretty awesome. She's always that hothead, which is, you know, it can
be annoying a lot of times, but this time it was perfect.
Yeah. It was like well played, well written in there. So, so we have Kira, and then she kind of like storms off, like, forget it.
I'm done with this debriefing.
Yeah. Yeah. So obviously the Romulans are doing very well with the, Deep Space Nine crew.
They're getting so much information, it's hard for them to keep up.
So next we get, Bashir is beating O'Brien on their 10th game of darts now. And he's kind of like, oh, how long we got to do this? Like, you know, it's like, well, there's supposed to be Klingons here. And he says, but there's no Klingons in this. You know, they have security out. There's no Klingons here. And all of a sudden, who comes walking down from the Hall of Suites are the Klingons. And
they're paying triple now.
Yeah. Quark is like, just doesn't care. So immediately the Klingons see the Romulans and they got to start a fight. And this is when the bar fight starts off again.
What Star Trek led a good bar fight?
Well, especially in Deep Space Nine. I mean, every once in a while, there's got to be a good bar fight.
Well, bar's one of your main sets. I mean, you got to do it.
Right, right. Next in the security office, Kira's telling Odo how they insinuated that maybe they had feelings for each other.
Like, that's ridiculous. Even though Odo was like,
so ridiculous.
Odo was like, yeah,
I love you.
I'll turn myself into any size dildo you desire.
Anything you want. I could be you if you wanted.
I could be a dildo. Oh, she'd like that. Oh, especially Mira Kira would like that.
Oh yeah,
Mira Kira was so into herself. Oh,
she was a freak.
I can't wait to do a Mira Deep Space Nine episode. That'll be fun.
Yeah, she was really into herself. So.
Is that incest?
Is that masturbation?
That's advanced masturbation.
That is, yeah. So O'Brien gets into the mix with the fight. Oh, and Odo gets the thing, basically, of course, saying, they're tearing my bar apart. You got to get them out of here. Get these Klingons out of here. So Odo runs off. But O'Brien's in the fight. And, of course, we get past O'Brien. Visiting the future, and he helps out just like we saw before in the fight. And so during the fight, O'Brien goes into the future once again, and this time he's in a corridor where he sees his future self opening a panel. And when he opens it up, an energy shot or a laser shoots out and knocks him to the ground. And O'Brien rushes to see if he's all right, but he's dead.
It's one of those fun lunch boxes on a wall.
Yes, it is, where he keeps all his phasers to shoot himself in the head. Again, O'Brien wakes up in the infirmary, and Bashir's telling him that everything's okay. And O'Brien's like, no, it's not. in a few hours, I'm going to be dead. So next we get O'Brien, Cisco O'Brien and Odo are in the corridor where he saw his future self. He says that there's some kind of phaser or high energy laser that killed him when he was looking into this bulkhead or this compartment. Odo opens it up and he's like, there's nothing here. You know, whatever's here, they didn't do it yet. So Odo is going to put a surveillance device into the corridor, and he's going to make sure that nothing goes wrong for good old O'Brien.
Which is interesting, and this made me think back to our Discovery talk about how there's no device in Discovery, whatever. Culber got his neck broken. But then again, this wasn't a Federation ship. This was a Cardassian ship, or space station, so... Different things. But I just wonder why internal sensors wouldn't pick it up. Well, they had to specifically put like a specific monitoring device there.
Right, exactly.
But it just made me think, I'm like, maybe they don't have monitoring on everything. But then again, it's a Cardassian station, so anything Federation wouldn't necessarily carry over. It just made me think, because I pointed out in Discovery and things when they come up in other series, like, oh, that's interesting. Huh, they're actually planting a listening device or a camera or something.
Right, and it's interesting, too, because this episode, too, with their tech, there's a lot of real interesting nuances that they put in here. So I think whoever, when they wrote this, they made it really, really cool. Like, they had some real cool ideas going on here. So at Ops, Dax says that she's been scanning surrounding space and that she's looking into the lower subspace bandwidths and she's found some Tetrion emissions. So that might explain why O'Brien's moving into the future.
And I think she said she thinks it might be a micro singularity, but they can't trace it because it's too deep in subspace or something.
Right, and then O'Brien says that you wouldn't see that outside a neutron star, and
Romulan warp device.
I know it's funny because then I'm thinking about that creature that lived in the Romulan warbird that I forgot which episode from Next Generation.
But yeah, there's a whole Next Gen episode on it. Like, wasn't O'Brien there during that time when they had that whole like where the time would freeze? Romulan warp. I almost want to see a Star Trek series. From the Romulan point of view, on a Dideridax class warbird, because like those singularities that they harness for their warp core or their energy device, they cause all sorts of problems when they just pop up here and there in Next Gen or here and there in Deep Space Nine. Like, how many problems do these Dideridax cruisers like cause just inside of Romulan space and things that Romulans do?
These damn warbirds.
They're micro singularities. It's crazy. I mean, it's a cool idea. I mean, it's actually probably more likely that we'll be able to make a harness the energy of a micro singularity versus actually ever getting actual warp drive. That's just because just the way the science works on it, from what I've seen on the PBS Science Channel YouTube thing, that they talk about different kind of ways to do theoretical things. They're saying like harnessing like a miniature black hole would be small singularity would be way easier than warp drive. And I'm like, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's cool. I don't know how you would possibly even do it, but that is interesting. So yeah, so O'Brien says that outside of a neutron star, you wouldn't see these kind of emissions, and that it should be affecting the gravimetric field signature of the station as well. So Sisko's saying, well, assuming that this is what's causing you to jump forward, this is the best possible reason for it. And Bashir says that he could probably combat this him catapulting into the future by giving him Delta series isotopes in his body, so it will kind of stop it, or at least stop him from going to the future as much. Next, we get Cisco takes Dax to pinpoint the singularity in effort to get rid of it. Then Major Kira says that she enters Ops and says that I had to move the Romulans because their replicators weren't working properly. And basically, it's the same level, Section 47, Level 2. And that was basically where O'Brien took Cisco and Odo from before. And Cisco's like, oh, that's where O'Brien got killed. And Kira's like, should I move him again? And Cisco's like, no, let's play this out.
Yeah, let's let them make their move.
It's like, you're one of your favorite crewmates, or, you know, under your command.
Supposedly,
you know, he's going to die. And you're like, no, let's see how this works out. And when he said that, I was like, you are an ass. Oh.
I couldn't believe he's just the chief petty officer. He's not important, right?
Not important. He only just makes this whole
station work.
This, yeah, the whole Deep Space Nine work.
Well, I love how Odo takes, I think next, Odo takes Sisko to the quarters right outside that that junction box. Mm-hmm. And, like, it's almost like a Data-esque scene, almost, because he's, like, explaining this really long, carried-out thing, and Sisko's like, get to the point. Whenever he's like, oh, these guys are spies for Gowron, and he's like, right. Why didn't you just say that? He's like, I gotta remind you how good I am. And they take apart the replicator, and he shows them that they transferred the replicator into a transporter.
Right.
And they've said, we learned from the Moriarty episodes, that the transporter and the replicator are kind of interchangeable a little bit, or at least in the holodecks, they use replicators and transporter technology to make the holodecks work. So,
I mean, it makes sense. They're basically the same thing.
Yeah, they use the kind of, I mean, it makes sense, because, I mean, also, like, you know, it replicates the meat, but, I mean, they also show them putting in, like, their plates into the replicator, so basically beams them somewhere to be cleaned. Or,
I assume they don't beam them to be clean. I always assume they just disassemble the particles of the plates, plate, or the food that was unused, and then just turns it into whatever matter is being demanded someplace else.
Yeah, that too. I mean, it's you know, either or. Beams to a dishwasher, or just takes it all apart from the molecular level.
Right, exactly. Sisko does go to Odo's office later on, and he says he has a Class 3 surveillance device. Someone put a Class 3 surveillance device in the bulkhead that, you know, O'Brien warned him about. And this is another funny thing. Right after, it's like, did you get a good look at it, even though you've been watching it? He's like, no, I didn't. I'm like, what?
How did they not get a good look at it? They specifically planted a device. I mean,
he's got probably cameras, and he's got all sorts of things, but
regular internal sensors.
But this is what it exactly was. You're saying before that someone beamed that into that bulkhead. So we don't find that for just a little bit later in the episode, but that's how it happened. But it was just weird. That's like, what? In Quarks again, Bashir and O'Brien are waiting out the time that he has until his death. And Quark arrives with drinks and says, hey, you know, next time you're in the future, you want to take a look at the numbers on the Dabot wheel? You know, can make some money. And, like, you know.
I'm not a fortune teller.
Yeah. I'm not a fortune teller. Leave me alone, Quark. I always like how O'Brien just, like, dismisses Quarks no matter what. It's like you just can't even stand him.
Oh, man, I love Quark. I get O'Brien not liking him, but, you know.
But again, O'Brien's thrown into the future. This time he's in the infirmary, and his body is covered in a white sheet. And he's like, I'm dead. And then Bashir's like, walks around the corner and goes, oh,
I'm so glad to see you.
He's like, yeah, you died. He's like, what? I died? And he says, yeah, if I just would have known to look for a basilar artery scan, I could have detected the damage in you and everything would have been fine. So next time you see me, definitely tell me, run a vascular artery scan and everything will be all right. He's like, what?
How could you let me die?
You sound like him there.
How could you let me die, Julian? And, well, it's like, sometimes the body just gives up.
His friend just died, and now he just, like, sees his past self. This is, like, another thing. It's, like, good sci-fi. He's like, oh, you're back again. Okay.
Oh, good. He knew it was happening, so he was hoping it was a matter of time, I guess. It's like,
just a matter of time.
I love, you're right. I love how nobody freaks out. It's just like, oh, yeah, this is just what happens to O'Brien every now and then.
This is what happens in Deep Space Nine. Weird shit.
Well, just O'Brien. Like, if it's something weird, it's got to be O'Brien.
Right, exactly.
I just want to watch another episode where something weird happens and they do call it out.
Yeah, right. Yeah. How was that?
Because O'Brien won't be involved when they do call it out.
when it's with O'Brien, they're like, yeah, that's weird, but that goes, you know, O'Brien's kind of freaky that way.
It's his beady eyes.
It's his beady eyes. So next we get that same scene you were telling about, talking about when Odo, it was an unused room in one of the habitat rings that someone hijacked the replicator into and made it into a mini transporter to send that surveillance device by the Romulans, by that bulkhead. And this device, it comes from a planet off Delvos 3. It's a planet on the border, on the Klingon border. And he's like, it's 90% chance this is probably, you know, it's a Klingon planted device. And Sisko, after a lot of pontificating, they're like, let's just get the Klingons into custody. And Odo says that there's no careful way to question a Klingon, so, which is true.
Yeah, I like that. It's especially more when you're looking at Laurel.
Yeah,
there's no delicate way to question a Klingon.
Just start beating the crap out of him.
Yes, yes, do that.
So back in the infirmary, O'Brien's there once again. He should have like a punch card, you know, how many times he showed up in the infirmary, you know, by the 10th time he gets a free infirmary ride or something.
He gets a free prostate exam from Bashir.
Ah, that's just what he wanted. So he wakes up and tells Bashir that he needs to run this basilar artery scan or he'll die in a few hours. And he says, well, who told you to do that? He's like, you did.
Who am I to argue with myself? It's like Bashir's in love with himself. It's kind of creepy.
Bashir's so in love with himself.
It's kind of creepy. Obvious. But it's also like he's also in love with O'Brien, too. It's really funny. Like, just watching the way he talks after not seeing Deep Space Nine for such a long time, like, there's something there. There's definitely something there.
Right. Next, we have Odo brings in the three Klingon operatives, and then he accuses them being spies and saboteurs. And then he says, you know, I'm willing to forego telling the Klingon intelligence that you've been captured because I know they don't look good on people who fail in their missions. He says, but we have to talk about what's going on here. And the Klingons are like looking at each other. Maybe we might talk because I don't know if Klingon's intelligence are going to be that forgiving with it as Odo might be.
I just love how Odo just like gets in under their skin. It's great.
Right. So right. Great. So we're back in ops again. Bashir tells Sisko that he's eliminated most of the radioisotopes from O'Brien's system. And his last treatment will be in a couple more hours. And there should be no more time shifting. Dax talks about the quantum singularity. It's orbiting the station in a roughly elliptical pattern.
It's an elliptical pattern. It's kind of like Halley's Comet.
So
every 5 hours it gets close. I wonder why that is.
I wonder. And then O'Brien is saying the anomaly is radiating this temporal energy at the and it's causing the time shifts.
He's pulled like a magnet.
Yeah, at the very last minute that we have O'Brien shifts again into the future, and all these people are running into a runabout, and there's some big commotion. You can tell there's like evacuating Deep Space Nine, and he sees his future self at the helm of the runabout, and he's basically ready to take off. And he goes, oh, good, you're here. You know, it says there's something happened. You know, there's Deep Space Nine was, you know, it's blowing up or it's going to be destroyed. And
know why. You should go back in time and figure that out.
Yeah. And so he comes back. So O'Brien wakes up. This time he didn't fall down. He just kind of is like still pointing at the screen. He goes, oh, we got a new problem, sir. Like, it's kind of funny because if you think about it, like, as Sisko and everyone else's viewpoint, this has got to be really strange. Some guy just saying, like, hey, I've been to the future just this last, like, half a second.
Yeah, it's there's literally no time in between because that's why, you know, reading the Memory Alpha, that's why they started with the dartboard thing at the beginning is to show that whenever he makes these jumps, no time has actually passed in the present.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. Well, except every time he ends up in the infirmary in the next scene.
Well, sure, but I mean, like, whenever the first time he cuts back, like, he's in mid-throw, and then he finishes the throw, and he collapses.
Right, exactly. Right.
And this time, you know, they're in the middle of conversation, and then he flashes, and they're still in the same conversation. He's like, hey, look, guys, things just got worse.
Right. Yeah. So obviously the station is going to be destroyed somehow. So Sisko Sisko talks to O'Brien about the time shift and any clue why the station was destroyed. And O'Brien's like, I couldn't see anything.
What about windows are really small if we only had a Discovery style window?
And so Sisko orders basically silently prepare for an evacuation if we need to. And we don't want to alarm the enemy that and know that this attack's coming sooner.
And Bashir's like, maybe we can trigger the time travel on purpose.
And to find out exactly why. So they're going to try to push O'Brien into the future. But this time, maybe not so far in advance, maybe a little bit sooner. So maybe like 2 or 3 hours. So in the infirmary, Bashir gives him this device that puts onto his arm that injects 2 rads of doses of the Delta isotopes. And this will get him to jump into the future. And he's tried to calibrate it, you know, how far he'll send it.
He's like give or take half an hour.
Yeah.
But so what's interesting in that scene, according to Memory Alpha, the little device Bashir is holding to when he touches the thing on his arm. It's actually the Derridax warp nacelle with different kind of lights in it. I read that on the Memory Alpha, and I rewatched the episode, and I paused it, and I'm like, that is totally the Derridax thing. That's hilarious. He's holding a little bit of a Romulan warbird in his hand. I'm like, that's hilarious. Well,
so there you go. That's why he's jumping back and forth in the future. So O'Brien pushes the device, and sure enough, he goes into the future, and this time he's in his bedroom.
He wakes himself up. Why is he in a single bed?
I don't know. And where's Keiko?
Yeah, Keiko goes away a lot in Deep Space Nine, so that's understandable. But why is the bed a single? Because they definitely had at least a double or a queen when she was around.
It doesn't make a lot of sense.
Maybe he's in Molly's bed because he feels sad.
Molly's gone.
Baby girl.
He wakes up his future O'Brien and he's basically telling him that there's something that's going to happen and we have to figure out why Deep Space Nine explodes. Wouldn't the future O'Brien be already on this? That's the part I don't understand. So obviously
they're probably making like different like splits in the Prime universe. So it's like
five. That's what I'm thinking.
This episode is like five or six, or I guess he time travels 5 times. So there's like 5 splits in the Prime universe in this one episode.
Yeah. So it's different ways he could have died, you know, in the future. So they run up to Ops, the one still in his bathrobe, and obviously the O'Brien that jumped forward in time because of the 2 rads, he's feeling pretty sick and he just lays on the floor.
I'm gonna take a nap, guys.
I'm tapping out here, guys.
It's like if the station blows up, don't wake me.
So at that exact moment when he's passing out, a Romulan warbird comes out of cloaking and starts attacking Deep Space Nine. And he's like, I'm not going to make it. You got to go back.
You got to go back and tell him. It's like, he's like, but I'm not you. It's like, yes, you are me. I'm you. You're me. And then I thought about the SNL, Mad TV, Arnold Schwarzenegger video.
Yeah, right.
I'm your clone. I'm you. You're me.
Yeah, exactly. So future, 2 hour future O'Brien says, what the hell? He throws on the device and goes goes back to the past.
But it's like he forgets about the future. It's like he remembers enough to tell them that what's going to happen, but it's like he forgets that he's a different O'Brien, not the same O'Brien.
I don't know. I think he sort of knew because he sort of knew that he died. He kind of alluded to it at the very end.
Yeah, he did, but he didn't. But he just kind of fell back into the role like it was just him. You know what I mean?
Well, it's just you. I mean, it's still you. Just that's not the you that died.
Yeah, that's true.
So he warns them about he warns Sisko and everyone about the cloaked Romulan warbird.
It's the Derridax cruiser. Let's put all our torpedoes on it. Make sure it doesn't kill us.
Right. And then obviously they make all the preparations and then they confront the Romulans in the meeting room and basically saying, we know what you're doing. We know you have that, that Romulan warship outside and it's cloaked and we have, what is it, like 50 torpedoes aimed at it. And
maybe we should go. And Sisko's like, yeah, you should do that. Get on that.
Yeah. And then, Quark, so the Romulans hightail it out, and obviously whatever they were planning it doesn't transpire. And the idea was that if the Romulans were to destroy Deep Space Nine and destroy the wormhole into for the Dominion to come through, that they would never be able to get into the Alpha Quadrant. So that was their play, apparently.
Yeah.
And then our last scene, we have Quark's again, and over Darts, O'Brien's telling Bashir how weird it is to be living in the past. It's like living in another O'Brien's life. And Bashir's, he's basically, living out the memories of what happened. He says, oh, you're going to hit like 20 or something like that.
On the edge.
Yeah, and, you know, so Bashir, and obviously does that. And at the last minute, O'Brien walks out, and then he whispers over to Quark, hey Quark, Dabo. And then everyone starts yelling, Dabo. And he's like, wait, come back. And O'Brien just walks away laughing.
Smiling,
so,
yeah.
It's yeah, great. Yeah. So, and that's how the show wraps. So definitely a very fun O'Brien Must Suffer. But Dave, what was your takeaways and feelings of this episode after seeing it?
Just after so much Discovery and all this Discovery talk we've been doing for the past, all feels like forever. You know, I enjoyed Discovery, but it's just nice to get back into Deep Space Nine and like nostalgic territory. And
it's like that cozy blanket.
Yeah,
you just get back into.
And you know, it's not that I liked Discovery for being dark and gritty. I didn't mind that, but Discovery hasn't made me fall in love with all the characters. There's a couple I like and some I'm like, but then again, it's only 15 episodes, but right. Like just like getting back into Deep Space Nine where like, oh, there's O'Brien. I love O'Brien. Oh, there's Quark. I love Quark. And Odo. Yeah. Odo's amazing. Kira, I hate you. But like, for some reason you work really well in this episode. So it's just, it was just so good. And I love O'Brien Must Suffers. And for a long time we were doing those like every 10 episodes. And
right.
It's been like 30 episodes since we've done one, I think.
Well, and the thing is too, is like, and we've said this more than once now. I mean, with Discovery and all the other series, was like, you know, they didn't really take off until like the second or third season of a lot of the series. Deep Space Nine.
Space Nine is a prime example. Like the first two seasons are extremely difficult to watch, but it is my most favorite Star Trek series.
Right, and on top of that, we've watched these episodes many times. So we've become sort of acclimated to everything, and we've fallen in love with these characters one way or the other, and you know, for good reason. There's, you don't rewatch something if you hated it, so. Obviously there's something that brings you back. So, who knows, maybe Discovery will get back into it someday, but,
I've said in past episodes, I just hope Discovery drops Michael Burnham being the main character and they focus on the ensemble, because that's the beauty of Deep Space Nine. There's the main cast is huge. Mm-hmm. Sure, you don't get some characters in some episodes because this is a great episode because Jake never shows up. But you know, like you've got like the characters you hate, and then like and sometimes they don't show up, and it's great when a character you don't like shows up, and they focus on all the good characters,
right?
And it's just so much fun, and it's the ensemble that makes it work, and you know, but O'Brien was just the transporter operator for like half the run of TNG. He was like a nobody, and then they gave him this part in Deep Space Nine, and it's a great part, and he's got a great character, and it's just so much fun to see. And I love that the writers thought, hey, let's pick on O'Brien. It's just fun to pick on the little Irish guy with the beady eyes. Let's pick on all the O'Brien Must Suffer episodes are pretty solid. They're so much fun to watch. How about you, Aaron?
Oh yeah, this is, I don't know exactly when, it's hard to say, but this is one of the episodes back in the third season when this came out that it was like, well, this is going to be I like this episode a lot. Like there was a lot of episodes, you know, from 1 to 3 that were like, eh, I don't know. 3 was getting better. This is one of the ones you're like, this is a good episode. This is fun to watch.
In season 3, they got the Defiant. And that's the thing I loved about this episode. Like, you know, they're saying Discovery's the first serialized Star Trek. And this episode, they're like, hey, look, they referenced the Romulans gave them a cloaking device for the Defiant. And the Defiant was just introduced in season 3. They referenced them getting captured by the Dominion. They're, you know, all this stuff that happened, like, solid world building is happening way back in the 90s, guys. It's amazing.
Right. And like, I don't know if you or somebody else was saying that if one of our past episodes that Deep Space Nine was not so much episodic, but serialized stories that advanced a plot more and more as time went on. So, which we never saw before in Star Trek up until Deep Space Nine. So, it was really cool. And it's like, I liked was O'Brien just, you know, he's talking to Quark, and then Quark sees like, oh, you have bigger problems right now, you know, kind of thing. You know? Like that, like, it's so like, you know,
it's like funny, but not like laugh out loud funny, but it's like, it's just funny to think about.
Right. Right. And the thing is that, it's so nonchalant, you know, it's like, yeah, you know, there's another O'Brien over there.
You know? You got bigger issues, dude. I'll let you deal with them.
Yeah. So that's kind of cool. I like that aspect of it. And like how Bashir runs into, you know, past O'Brien when he's dead. He's like, oh, you're here. Good. Yeah. You know? So
they just don't even bat an eye. It's like, oh, good. I'm so glad you're here. This is how you fix this.
It does make a bit of a point, like certain points where O'Brien jumps into the future, like that he runs into himself. Like, how does that happen?
Well, he's always next to himself when he jumps back. I mean, that's a little weird that he's always near himself whenever he jumps.
Yeah, wouldn't you be in the same spot you were jumping? So, you know. I don't know.
It's like he's tied to himself.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, obviously, this is like all like theoretical, you know, people put someone jumping into the future and for a few seconds seeing himself. I mean, there's no real science behind it. It's sort of fantasy with science kind of padded around it. So,
yeah, like reading the Memory Alpha, the science advisor wasn't crazy about it. He said, you know, it was super campy saying that radiation was the cause of it. But, you know, it's kind of fun, you know, thinking about how it's not just radiation, it's the Derridax's, you know, micro singularity that they use as a power source, which is which is fantastic. Who knows what kind of weird side effects that could have?
Sure, absolutely.
A micro singularity is a weird thing. Like controlling a singularity, you're feeding it enough, and it's harvesting it. You're feeding it to keep it stable, but then you're also harvesting the power that the Hawking radiation that it emits. So it's really cool.
Yeah. I like that too, and I like, you know, we talked before how we've seen the Romulans' propulsion systems cause problems.
Yeah, well, they freeze time.
yeah, it's cool. It's cool stuff. I enjoy seeing all that.
Isn't it also the one where like Geordi and Ro were like sort of dead, and they were like no one could see them.
That's what they thought. Yeah, that was they were all in a shuttlecraft with Picard, Ro, Troy, and Geordi, and Data.
Yeah, and then they see like Beverly getting shot in the middle of getting shot in the gut by a Romulan disruptor. It was great.
Right. Yeah, it was cool stuff. So, and it happened to be like an alien that was living inside the Romulan warbird. So
it's just so cool. Like the things they could do. I mean, sure, they may not be super scientifically sound, but they're fun ideas.
Oh yeah, super fun.
And that's all you can really ask for in like science fiction, especially back in the 90s when a lot of the science wasn't super well understood. I don't think.
Yeah,
I mean, because they're still working out like, you know, how quantum stuff works now, and they're working out ways to explain it, and you know, I mean, I know it's been around for a while, but there's all the way reality works with physics and science and all that stuff is it's constantly being reevaluated and constantly being updated because the way things are perceived aren't always how they are. It's just super fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know. It's one of those things that obviously Star Trek always kind of like takes a little science and then just peppers it up with, you know, or shoots some drugs into it, makes it crazier. And then you're just like, wow, this is fun, but it's got a little science to it. So you can your imagination can run wild there for that, you know, 40 some minutes of that episode. So, yeah, cool stuff. I really enjoyed this episode. Like I said, this is one of the third season episodes that made me go, wow, this is awesome.
Yeah. It's definitely one of the ones that sticks out because, like I said, the first two seasons are rough. The third season is a little bit rough, but the third season definitely opens up a whole lot more because we know about the Dominion War threat that's looming above. We've got a starship, so they're not, you know, they're not just stuck on the space station all the time. They can go take starship missions with their Defiant. So season three starts opening up, and next season we get Worf.
Yeah, right, exactly.
So it's just Deep Space Nine just evolved so well. It's just I love it so much. And I recently did like a write up for the Geekiverse where I rated my favorite Star Trek series, and of course I put Deep Space Nine as number one.
Yeah, a lot of people feel the same way as you do. I mean, I enjoy Deep Space Nine. It's just I just grew up with the original series, so that's just I have a soft spot for it.
I mean, I grew up with the original series. My dad had all the episodes like on VHS tape. We'd watch those all the time, or we'd catch reruns. And and really, when I started, it was like I grew up with TNG because I remember anticipating TNG coming on because we liked the old Star Trek.
Right.
So
right.
I remember anticipating TNG, and I remember that was always a Saturday ritual. Mom would make awesome homemade pizza, and then we'd watch Star Trek TNG. It was great. And then, for whatever reason, we didn't stick with Deep Space Nine. Like, maybe like Dad also kind of fell off the wagon, because the first couple of seasons of Deep Space Nine were rough. Voyager, we fell off the wagon, too, because I don't think I've completed Voyager until a lot later in my life.
I it was funny you said that, because there was somebody else was talking about that. Another YouTuber was talking about, they were talking about Discovery, and then they were mentioning how in the beginning of the first season of Deep Space Nine, we see the Enterprise fly away, and the guy goes, "Wait, don't leave me alone with these strangers."
Oh, that was Red Letter Media.
Oh, was that who it was? Yeah, I thought it was funny. So I was like, yeah, that's hilarious. Because kind of like how I felt when I saw that. I was like, wait, who are those? I don't know these people. They're all weird.
Yeah, that was the Red Letter Media, one of their reviews on Discovery. So yeah, if you guys have not heard of Red Letter Media, check them out. They do amazing stuff. I've not personally talked or met any of these people, but they do amazing things. They've got the Plinkett reviews. Mm-hmm. Where they rip apart the four Next Gen movies and the three Star Wars prequels and Episode 7 and Titanic and Indiana Jones 4. Those are great. And they do a review series, and they reviewed like the first episode of Discovery, the mid-season, and then the finale. So they did a really good job with it. And their guy Mike referenced in Star Trek all over the place, even in some of their other videos. They're not Star Trek related. He'll reference Star Trek if something reminds him of Star Trek. So it's a lot of fun to watch Red Letter Media.
Right, right. Yeah, so I thought that was funny when he said that. So and that's how I felt in the beginning of Discovery. Deep Space Nine. But then, you know, as time goes on, you got into it. It was one of those things that it was weird, because when this came on, when Deep Space Nine came on, Babylon 5 had started right around the same time. So it was they were both fighting for your attention, and both were like almost good, but not great. So, and both of them, both Babylon 5 and Deep Space Nine, both got really good within a couple seasons.
Deep Space Nine just kept getting better and better, whereas like Babylon 5 peaked at the Shadow War.
Yeah.
And then it just fell apart. It was like garbage after the Shadow War, I remember.
Yeah, it definitely fell off a little bit there. But
I haven't rewatched Babylon 5. I really want to, but I remember trying to rewatch like the pilot of Babylon 5
two years ago.
And like because they were using CG and not like live models, like it was cool at the time. Because they had, you know, the CG, and like, oh, that's really cool CG. Because at the time, it was, you had never seen it before, but now it just is so dated.
Yeah.
But I do want to try and force myself to rewatch Babylon 5, because I remember it was a fun, good science fiction show. I need to find like a Bible that has like how to watch it in order, because it's, I think on Netflix, it's in the order which it came out. Which isn't the actual order the show goes in. Which is
really? Because I haven't seen it on Netflix. I haven't looked for it, though.
I mean, this was like a year or two ago. It may be gone from Netflix.
I really haven't looked for it,
I wouldn't know. But the last time I tried to watch it was a year or two ago. It was on Netflix, and I need to find a Bible or something so I can try to watch it in order.
Right. Gotcha. Well, yeah, but at that time, you know, they were both fighting for your attention. It was difficult because, like I said, the first two seasons of Deep Space Nine, while it was entertaining, it wasn't amazing.
Yeah.
So in season three and this episode, you know, and there's a bunch of like, I think House of Quark is in season three too. I mean, there's some really good episodes in season three,
but House of Quark is great.
It took a while for it to really ramp up, you know, so.
Actually, I think that's what happened. I think we switched to Babylon 5 because I think we liked Babylon 5 better at the time. Because I remember falling off of Deep Space Nine really fast.
You're like, I don't know. Yeah, but anyways, yeah, so fun episode for sure.
It was. Did you read the whole Memory Alpha?
No, I haven't read the whole thing.
Well, I was reading it today, and it was really weird. Like, a lot of people were unhappy with it. Like on the production side, I don't know about the actor side, but the production side, a lot of people were just unhappy with it because they felt like it was like too TNG of an episode, like too techno babbly, and like this could have happened in any series. But I don't know. Having the weird time displacement and thing, it could have happened anywhere. But I don't know. I felt like they did great world building in this episode. They referenced stuff that happened in previous episodes, which was great. They're you know establishing continuity inside the series. Like, these events happened and we're referencing them, and they're building stuff to go to the future, you know, and how the Romulans get involved. And you know, this is probably a seed for in the Pale Moonlight, whenever the, you know, Sisko does his thing with the Romulans later. I mean,
right.
It's got to be a seed for that, you know, what he ended up doing.
I do wonder why the Romulans didn't come back and try to complete that plan again to destroy the wormhole.
It's kind of disappointing. Star Trek gives us some amazing things and then they forget about it.
Yeah, they're like, yeah, that didn't work. You know, like, well, why don't we try again?
Conspiracy. I mean, season one of Next Gen was rough. But at the end, they had Conspiracy. And Conspiracy was an amazing episode that they never really followed up on.
Right, exactly.
Because, I mean, they kind of evolved the bugs into the Borg. But it's not a one-to-one thing. It's like, oh, we just changed the idea. And like because they were basically assimilated, you know, the bugs took them over. So it was kind of like a similar idea, but it wasn't a one-to-one. So they got great things, and that's you know, whenever we talked about Discovery has some great ideas, but like they were trying to do so much in the season, they left so much of these great ideas on the table and totally forgotten.
Right, exactly. And you know, that's the thing, is like, yeah, sometimes you see these cool things like the Romulans trying to destroy the wormhole. I would be like, well, that didn't work the first time, but you should try again. You know, and the Romulans actually aren't necessarily completely wrong, you know, to try to stop the Dominion.
Yeah.
By taking out that wormhole. I mean, it's kind of a smart idea.
I'm surprised they didn't reference this in Pale Moonlight.
Right. Or even just say like, hey, I guess those Romulans had the best idea after the Dominion War destroyed so much of the Federation.
Well, but then, you know, they use the self-replicating mines to in front of the wormhole so no one can use it. It's like, sure, we don't want to destroy it. We want to prevent people from using it.
I know. It's just weird.
Yeah. It's like, it was like, you know, they're get a jail free card. I mean, it's a really cool way to explore the rest of the galaxy. And it's also the Celestial Temple. Cause I mean, that's a huge plot point because Sisko becomes a god, at least a wormhole alien, which since they're, you know, fourth dimension or probably fifth or sixth dimensional creatures, they're basically gods to us, a three dimensional being.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. They can see on a whole different plane of existence.
Yeah. Like linear time confuses them because they move through time like we move through space.
Right. Yeah. It's so like us talk. It's like us talking to a picture on a piece of paper.
Yeah. That's how far away removed we are from them. So they're basically godlike. So it's such a fascinating thing. And that's one thing I loved when Discovery had that Harry Mudd episode where, like, they said he got the technology from a fourth-dimensional being. And I'm like, that's really cool because the wormhole aliens are at least fourth-dimensional. I'm sure they're probably higher up on the food chain because they're so confused about linear time.
Yeah,
So the less you know about linear time, the further you have to be away from the third dimension. Because Q isn't confused about linear time, but he's obviously at least a fourth-dimensional being.
I would say he's probably more than that.
Sure, yeah, but I'm just saying, like, he's between four and the wormhole aliens.
Yeah. Yeah, or maybe. Yeah, I don't know. It's weird.
Because the wormhole aliens are totally confused about linear time. Q is totally fine with linear time. So I would say the more confused you are with linear time, the further you're away from the fourth dimension. The more familiar you are with it, the closer you are to the fourth dimension.
Right, exactly. Right, right. It makes sense. Or at least maybe their just imaginations can't go that simple. You know, they're just like, that just doesn't make any sense. You can't think about, you know, like, I don't know, like linears. It's like you said, like I said, seeing a picture and that they can't see, you know, three-dimensionally, or they don't know about, you know, the movement of time.
And Q himself said the Q used to be not too different from humans. So, mm-hmm. I mean, like, it's just a level of ascension or, you know, something like that, or evolutionary path or whatever that can get you on that path to become semi-omnipotent, semi-powerful, you know, changing your perspective from third to fourth.
Or from exactly.
fourth to fifth. You know, it's a just a stage of life or something for creatures, or it seems like that's how they're setting up in Star Trek. So, like, you know, another couple thousand years, maybe, or I guess millions, maybe Earthlings will be like the Q, and the Q will be like the Q will be like the prophets. They'll just make a wormhole and just live in there and be bored.
We're just going to live in this wormhole. but cool stuff for sure.
Yeah, like I was totally hit with nostalgia watching this because, like, I mean, during our break, did we watch an episode or did we?
We did the Measure of a Man.
That's and, right. That's right.
I think we did something else. I can't remember.
Oh yeah, we did Measure of a Man with Kip. We had guests sometime in the middle because we did the When the Train Stops.
Right.
Stuff. So we had some guests on during the break. So, yeah, I don't know why. It was only 15 episodes, but it just feels so long since we've talked about not Discovery.
I know we've talked about Discovery quite a bit. It's hard. I mean, even this conversation, we've heavily talked about Discovery.
Sure, but I mean, now that Discovery is a thing, it's hard not to compare it to other things as we're revisiting these old things.
Right. Well, because we've been, our whole brain has been like hijacked by Discovery for the last, you know, almost what, 9 months? I don't know how long it's been, but it's been a while.
Since September. So
yeah, like it's been a while.
7 months. Yeah. So yeah, it's fascinating. And now, I mean, going forward, I mean, we're living in a post Discovery world. So anything we talk about now that, especially if I called something out in Discovery, I'm going to try and think about it. And if it comes up in another episode, I'll be like, oh, well, that's interesting. Because like I said, the listening devices, and I'm like, okay, well, I can maybe see why they didn't know how that Ash broke his neck. But then again, at the same time, they're not on a Federation ship or a Federation space station. It's completely different since they're on a Cardassian space station. So, I mean, you know, who knows? We're not told like how standard procedure, you know, how security is set up on starships. So we don't know, but it's just interesting to think about. And it did make me think about how I called out that scene, and it made me reevaluate that. Like, maybe they don't. So it's just nice to be like, oh, you know, see things in Star Trek that are canon. It's like, okay, well, maybe I can be less harsh, or, you know, maybe I was too harsh in the past and I can, you know, take a step back. Like, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's for sure. And I've said this more than once, that we have become so spoiled with all the choices of entertainment that we can be super critical on things. Like, and I've often thought, like, if we would have seen, you know, the first, you know, New Hope Star Wars movie now, we'd just probably mock it into, you know, extinction. And there would never be a Star Wars series because we're just so jaded with everything. We say, that's crap. Oh, that's shit. You know, or, you know, so we go back to like this Deep Space Nine episode, and it's a great story and it's fun to watch all the characters and everything, but it's not like there isn't any plot holes anywhere in there. You could pick this thing apart. It's just funny when Discovery comes on, we just tear everything apart and dismantle it and talk about why it works or why it doesn't work. So it's just a different take.
Yeah, sure. But, you know, when the next Star Trek series comes out, we'll be like tearing that apart and we'll be looking at Discovery with nostalgic eyes. So it's just, I guess it's just the way things work for fans and fandom and everything. And it's not to say we hate Discovery, because we both immensely enjoyed it. We just had qualms with it, which is, I think it's fine to have qualms with something.
Sure. Yeah. You could be objective.
Yeah. And that's what we always try to be with anything we watch. You know, even as nostalgic as we are with this, I'm like, huh, that seems kind of funny. You know, we do try to point out things that are like, maybe they didn't think this through, but yeah, this one was just so much fun.
Yeah, it was fun. It's like going to visit an old friend or family. You're like, oh yeah, we haven't seen each other in a while.
Oh yeah.
So, yeah, it's good to get back into the old episodes.
Absolutely. So, yeah, next week will be something old again, or maybe we'll get back into one of our.
But old is new.
Old is new. Yeah. And we can watch everything with a post-discovery lens and try to see how that all works.
Yeah, that's right. Let's see what's going on.
So, anything else about this episode?
No, not for me.
Yeah, it was a fun ride through nostalgia. All our music is from Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com or Warp 11 on Twitter. With the show, you can find us at syntholics.com. You can email us at syntholics@yahoo.com. And you can join the Facebook group at facebook.com/group/syntholics. Please come in and join the group. It's so much fun getting to interact with all of you who listen to the show and just have fun talking about Star Trek, science, and just funny things that we find funny that are science fiction related. So please go ahead and join us. It's so much fun. Also,
absolutely.
If you guys have a YouTube account, check out our YouTube channel, youtube.com/synthaholics. Our podcasts show up there. So if you just like to have something going at work and you don't have iTunes or something on your phone, you can just put us on YouTube and just listen to us in the background. We've got Discovery reviews we're still putting out. We've got one more to put out, and then I've got to figure out something new to put out for you guys as a weekly Star Trek thing or a weekly science fiction thing. There's also the weekly cocktail tutorials. Today, as of the recording of the episode, we dropped Romulan Ale, so it's really tasty. Aaron had it last week.
Very good.
Yeah.
So, good stuff. Strong, too.
Yeah, it's got Everclear in it, so you know it's legit.
Absolutely. And hey, if you can go on to Apple iTunes, rate and review us there. We appreciate that. That helps us get seen by more people. And if you have a little bit of money you could throw our way to keep our podcast going, go to patreon.com/synthaholics, and that's a great way to support us. And if you don't have any money to throw us, we totally understand, but a great way to tell people about Synthaholics and our podcast is word of mouth. Just let people know that we exist. That helps people listen to us more. That's terrible.
Well, yeah, but to listen to us more, find us more, because we're trying to grow. We're not a huge Star Trek podcast, and we would like to get to more ears. It's super encouraging. Sometimes when people either message us or leave us a comment on our podcast on YouTube and say, "Hey, look, you guys are really balanced," review on Star Trek. It's just so nice when people are like, they're like, "Hey, you guys are really objective. You guys call out the good when you see the good and bad when you see the bad." It's really nice seeing that instead of just, "Oh, you hate Star Trek." I'm like, no, we don't. So it's nice when we see that. So more people, if people are interested in objective Star Trek reviews, let them know that what we do, because we try to be super fair.
That's right, we do. And, just people... people like to go back and watch or listen to our takes on different episodes like this one, going back. It's like, "Oh yeah, I forgot about this episode. This is a great episode." And then you'll want to I want to get back into Deep Space Nine again, because I've been watching so much Discovery. So maybe that will spark your Trek needs.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, just it's great to share, because it just helps us spread the word, and we don't do really any advertising other than just I share out the show on Facebook and on Twitter, and then I just kind of leave it up to the podcast gods for whoever to find us. So if you guys like the show, share it, tell your friends about it, because that's word of mouth is going to be one of the most effective ways to listen to podcasts. Half the podcasts I listen to are either from my friends or recommendations from my friends or podcasts that my friends do. Shout out to Chris Chavez and Robbie Palmer and people that we know who do podcasts in the Buffalo area.
Absolutely. Good stuff.
Well, thank you all so much for listening. It's been a great ride revisiting Deep Space Nine Visionary or Suffering Over Brian episode. We hope you guys enjoyed it as well. Thank you all so much for listening. Live long and prosper, one and all. And we'll bullshit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.